This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program.
Welcome, this is A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast show. Our community is made up of so many amazing and diverse groups of people, as are the programs on Joy 94.9. There is something there for everybody. A Little Pot of Joy is where we highlight just some of these amazing programs. We're opening the evening with a podcast from Backseat S&M. Kai Clancy, Brother Boy, which aired on June 9th.
Michael had a chat with Indigenous trans man Kai Clancy, ahead of being part of Brother Boys, the latest episode in Living Black's documentary series.
They chatted about being trans in an Aboriginal community and the challenges that young people face in this time of their lives. Kai also talked about being this year's Young Achiever of the Year at the Brisbane Pride Festival Queen's Birthday Ball Award.
So if you'd like to listen to the entire podcast, go to joy.org.au/backseat SNM, and more podcasts are available for download from the Joy website, joy.org.au.
This is A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program.
Tonight, well, this afternoon, SBS, surely in SBS, is Living Black. And this week's episode is all about Brother Boys, about trans men, Indigenous trans men, and how they get together, work things out, how they live their lives. With me on the phone is one of the people in Brother Boys on Living Black on SBS this afternoon. Hello, hello, Kai Clancy.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Well, good. How are you?
Yeah, good. Good. Thank you.
Now, look, you're a pretty big name around the traps in Northern Australia.
Where I'm from.
Where are you from? Well, firstly, where are you from?
I was born in Townsville. I grew up there. I went to high school in Brisbane, in Queensland, and yeah, just moved to Melbourne. But I'm up in Queensland. I'm back up in Queensland right now. But yeah, I'm from North Queensland.
And you are a brother boy. What does the term brother boy mean?
It's a term that literally means boy. I guess that's what's used in the Aboriginal community to describe men. And I guess in a queer context, it's used to describe men who we're assigned female at birth, eh? So in queer Aboriginal context, it means transgender man.
I know you've been doing a lot of work on social media. You use social media to get some funds for procedures and such. Throughout your work, both in Indigenous communities and also in non-Indigenous communities, what's the difference between your reception in an Indigenous context and also in a non-Indigenous? You know, how do people see you in those two different spheres?
Yeah, in the Aboriginal context, I guess, you know, people are really willing to accept that I'm transgender and this is who I'm meant to be. I guess they know me my whole life and they really accept it. People who haven't known me my whole life and don't know much about transgender stuff, it's a bit hard for people to accept where I'm coming from because they don't really understand. But I guess, yeah, in the non-Indigenous sphere, people are getting better with all this, you know, revelations of Caitlyn Jenner and whatnot. Things are getting better for transgender people.
Well, especially with Caitlyn Jenner and that transformation and transition, have you seen any? Well, other than obviously, you know, she is hugely famous and a celebrity, but have you seen any similarities between you and the Jenner phenomenon that we've seen the last couple of days?
Sort of. Like, a lot of people stopped talking to me once I transitioned. My friends from high school and stuff. But now they start sharing all this Jenner stuff, I'm hoping they'll talk to me again.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, I think, you know, getting a lot of visibility out there. A lot of people are really, you know, feeling what Jenner feels. Yeah, now it's getting out. The word's getting out. It's just a misconception that it's really easy to transition like she did. She has lots of money, though.
Well, and people as well.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess it's good that her family supported her and stuff, but yeah, the money side of things is just another part of transitioning that a lot of transgender people don't have, an employment opportunity. So that's something that Caitlin has and many people can't. So
now, last time,
we've got Aboriginal people too.
Oh, exactly right. Exactly right. And that's where, you know, your voice is really important.
Yeah, I hope so, you know, like, getting the word out there that, you know, we're just regular people, like, you know, yourself.
That's right, exactly right. Now, last night in Brisbane, you were a winner. Congratulations at the Queen's Birthday Ball Awards. Young Achiever of the Year. How does that stack up to with everything else that's happened to you over the course of your life?
Yeah, like, that's really big, hey? Like, I was so overwhelmed with that. I didn't know I won it till people were messaging me. And, you know, I guess I'm just really proud. It's a good thing. I don't even know how to describe it, eh? Like, it feels like I've got a lot of support behind me now.
Which is fantastic. It's great.
Yeah.
You are a young achiever. I'm going to label you as a young achiever now. You are a young achiever, and there are a lot of young people who are in, as you have put it, going through a stage of consultation with themselves.
Yeah.
What sort of advice would you give those young people, whether they're Indigenous or not? What can they do to help them through this stage?
Don't let it eat away at you. If you've got, you know, feelings, have a talk to someone that you trust. They'll listen and talk to people about it. Don't bottle it up, because it's going to be bad for yourself. So, have a chat to someone, a professional or your mate.
It's a good place. Good place to start. Now,
it's a good place to start.
Exactly
yeah.
right. You are on this afternoon's Living Black episode called Brother Boys. It's airing at 5 PM on SBS One, and repeated tomorrow at 9 PM on NITV. How was it for you being followed by Laura Murphy Oates, and how do you think it's going to help others in your your situation and where you have been coming to?
I guess, you know, where I came to, I started off my transition not knowing, you know, if there was any other Aboriginal trans men. I would just start Googling, Aboriginal trans men, and there was nothing there. There was only Sister Girls, and they did a Living Black episode too. So now, people can Google this. They're starting off and they'll see a trans man who's Aboriginal. They'll see actually three of us now. And they'll have someone to look up to. Any age, you know, young, old, me, middle. Yeah.
Any age is good. All ages are good. All ages are good.
Yeah, I'm just trying to make out that I'm in the middle because there's a younger one in there, so.
Oh, there you go. Good one. In the middle. Perfect.
Yeah.
If you miss the show tonight on SBS or tomorrow on NITV, you can check it all out at sbs.com.au/livingblack. Kai Clancy, congratulations, and thank you so much for having a chat to us here on Joy.
You're listening to A Little Pot of Joy on Joy 94.9 with Alice and Andrea. Up next, we have a podcast from Word for Word, Call Me Eloise, trans activist Eloise Brooke.
Freelance writer and trans activist Eloise Brooke joins Dean Beck on Word for Word. Next year, the Australian Bureau of Statistics will undergo a national census, and they are currently reviewing how they will categorise sex. Eloise talks about why she believes trans people need to be included.
So again, this is a fantastic podcast, and if you'd like to listen to the whole thing, or if you just can't listen to this show live, download the podcast from the Joy website, joy.org.au, or the iTunes store.
You're listening to A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program.
Hello and welcome to Word for Word. Thank you so much for joining me today. Dean Beck with you. Very shortly, Australia will undergo a census. Now, this apparently is only the second time that has been an opportunity for Australia to count how many people are transgender amongst our community. Although I don't think the first time it was done that well. Joining us to discuss this and other trans issues is board member of the Gender Centre in Sydney and freelance writer Eloise Brooke. Welcome.
Hi.
Thank you for joining us today. the second time in history that this is presented. What does that mean?
Yes, so the distinction here is between a survey and a census. So there's been a number of surveys done, but as far as a national census goes, the only other time it's been done was in India in 2011.
Right. Eloise, I'm going to ask for you to, if at any point in time during our conversation that I make a mistake in my language, that you will correct me, and in that we will all learn. The space of children identifying other than that of which they were born is something that we are currently in this country dealing with to a great extent. Last year, the Royal Children's Hospital here in Victoria experienced something like a 40% growth in referrals to the gender clinic. That's extraordinary.
Yeah, it is quite an extraordinary figure. And stepping away from the Indian census and looking at some of the more the sketchier surveys that come out of America and Europe, you get a figure of the general population of about 0.3%. So in America, that means 700,000 people. In Australia, that probably means somewhere around about between 60 and 70,000. But the thing about that figure is that it doesn't take into account anyone under the age of 16. And as the numbers increase, as the facilities open up for more and more children who find themselves in a situation of identifying as transgender, then the numbers only grow larger. If you looked at the general population, then the section of the community that is between 0 and 16 years old is probably somewhere around 18 to 20% of, you know, representative.
We have seen our state government acknowledge the tremendous growth within the gender clinic at the Royal Children's Hospital and recently provide an additional $6 million to that clinic to help backfill, I guess, some of the need because the demand is so great. Why do you think it is that we are seeing so many young people, and let's say under the age of 16, as you've identified, coming to terms with their disconnect, their dysphoria, the fact that they're born in a body that doesn't connect with their brain, why are they coming forward so much?
I think it's a really complex situation. And to come up with one answer to it wouldn't do justice to
the complexity.
Complexity. Mm. But some things to consider are that we live in a time now where social conformity around gender is significantly better than it was 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago.
Even five years
ago. So if you have a parent who has a child and from the age of 2 to 3 or 4 starts being quite adamant that their gender doesn't line up with their physical sex.
And there's a real honesty about that age group that are very clear.
Yes.
You know, and that clarity is very confronting for someone who doesn't get it.
Absolutely. And so this seems to be, I think, the newest thing in this is that we are hearing those stories younger and younger and parents not wanting to sweep it under the carpet, but instead going, you know what, this is really serious. My child is threatening, you know, or displaying signs of depression and or, you know, parents being worried about children's lives even. Mm. And so that has changed things.
And it must be difficult to witness a core sadness, you know, in a 4 or 5 year old that is far beyond a bit of being miserable.
I think that is exactly right. The decisions that parents come to about these situations goes over many years. It's often painted in more conservative news as being flippant or being a fad or being a psychological condition. But the truth is that parents want the best for their children and they're doing everything that they can and they reach the end of their tether and they realise that nothing has changed. Their children are consistently the same and describing themselves in the same way and that everything around them is the thing that's changing.
So in the olden days, what took place in that space? I mean, it must have been utter resistance by parents to have a child conform to the gender in which they were born. And and create an even greater divide within the child's life?
I think we just don't know. Or we can talk about our own experience as transgender people, that we did what we needed to survive. There's a really popular theory, and I kind of like it, but I have no problem if there's a bit of a hole in it. But these are the kind of stories I tell myself about being transgender, is that, you know, from about the age of 4 or 5, we start to develop our sense of gender identity in relation to those around us. So up until 4 or 5,
it's all little, about me.
Yeah, and little boys can wear dresses and girls can play with trucks. Certainly we're talking about in the, you know, 70s, 80s and 90s. But at some point, around about 6 or 7 years old, parents and society begins to segregate children into specific genders. So that's a point often in a young transgender person's life, regardless of how they're identifying, where they're being made to conform to gender stereotypes that they just have no kind of sense of. Mm. And in our day and age, in 2015, then that begins to be, you know, that's channeled, or there are a place that children can find resolution or resolve for it. But back earlier, 10, 20 years ago, it meant that to survive, you had to be quiet and you just had to do or perform the thing that everyone required you to be. And there's a common narrative in the way that people who transition, who are perhaps the other side of 30, talk about a performance that they have always had to do, and that in transition or in realizing that they are transgender, experience a wonderful exhilaration of finding themselves or discovering or being allowed to express exactly who they are. And that's the difference.
Society's come a long way on this journey and continues to be on the journey too. But it can only occur when there are stories and people willing to tell their stories and people willing to step forward to share. And much of what I understand of those who have transitioned is that they want to, for want of a better word, fly under the radar, not be noticed, not be seen, just to be accepted in and what they are. And therefore, them stepping forward to tell their stories is in conflict to them being under the radar.
Yes. And I think that's one of the many challenges that the transgender community and gender non-conforming community in Australia currently faces. I am very fortunate to be serving on the board of directors at the Gender Centre, and we're at a pivotal point between providing services that, you know, are about hiding and keeping people safe and taking advantage of the incredible change in the media landscape to promote ourselves, to make ourselves more visible and to raise tolerance and awareness in the community.
You used an interesting word then, and that was hiding. Is it hiding, or is it just being accepted in a way that is not in a disconnect with what you want to be? You know, is that hiding? Or is that living true? I don't know.
The levels of violence and disadvantage in the transgender and gender non-conforming communities are so great and so underreported that they are just a way of surviving.
Yeah. How do we get those stories out there, though, if people are hiding?
Well, Chas Bono and Caitlyn Jenner and Andreja Pejic, these are all fantastic role models for the community. They are in positions that are in some ways privileged, but are also displaying immense courage in telling their stories. I mean, Caitlyn Jenner was or is a darling of America. She, when she was Bruce, was an all-star athlete, and she courageously told and is telling her story and making people more and more aware.
You're on Joy 94.9, and this is A Little Pot of Joy with Alice and Andrea. Up next from Lefty Pinko's Passing Privilege.
Unless you live under a rock, you've probably heard about Caitlyn Jenner's Vanity Fair cover, through which she revealed to the world her new self. If you go on the internet or read the news, you've probably also heard a wide variety of opinions about her method of coming out.
This week, Emma and Patrick talk about Caitlyn Jenner and passing privilege, what it means, how much it matters, and whether it's actually any of our business. If you can't listen to the show live, download the podcast from the Joy website, www.joy.org.au, or the iTunes store.
This is A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program.
Good evening, everyone. This is Emma on Lefty Pinko's. Patrick, good evening.
Good evening, Emma. It is absolutely remarkable, as always, to be here on Lefty Pinko's with you.
It is.
Yes.
Always, every week. Yeah. A few months ago, we hosted a Lefty Pinko's show on privilege. In that discussion, we covered all sorts of privilege, from race, religion, wealth, upbringing, and a whole lot of other things. I even had a Vladimir Putin privilege prepared, which I didn't get to say. It was the privilege of arrest. If you can arrest everybody, you have incredible privilege.
You certainly do have incredible privilege if you can arrest everybody.
One thing we didn't cover was passing privilege.
Certainly, that was one that I was very keen for us to delve into more, and I'm very, very glad that we are going to delve into it even further tonight.
It's something many LGBT folks are acutely aware of, and it seems to be something that I was trying to come up with a word that described everybody else. I guess it was the heteronormative cisgender world seems to be sadly unaware of, and yet apply quite rigorously. Tonight we're going to be picking away at passing privilege to see what it is, where it happens, and what we can and should do about it.
When we go down to a lot of this type of ideas of passing, I mean, for example, Reese, I'm going to pull this one up because, of course, this was the biggest news story last week, was Caitlyn Jenner's Vanity Fair cover.
It made a little splash, didn't it?
It made a huge splash. It caused a lot of discussions. Some of the great articles that have come out of this, you know, some are, almost every single one of them, may I point out, is very positively affirming and welcoming Caitlyn officially. Hmm. Because she had come out as trans and now she is very formally given her name and now we embrace it. And there is this kind of interesting interplay between trans, some members of the trans community and of the queer community at large discussing her role as a trans, as a very visible trans person now, especially due to what is being perceived as her sort of femininity. And there's some great articles like Caitlyn Jenner is High Femme, Get Over It, which I think is one of the best articles about this one, which is on Medium. Where is My Vanity Fair cover, Caitlyn Jenner, which is an alternative to that, which is there was the My Vanity Fair cover campaign where lots of trans women and trans men posted pictures of them of themselves.
Megsies was stunning.
Megsies was stunning. I saw that. That is gorgeous. She looks amazing. And all saying, you know, with the same Vanity Fair cover. And it is talking about the fact that trans is beautiful and trans is this amazing variety. And it isn't just between the binaries. It isn't just the binaries at all.
It's and I think just the sheer amount of noise around Caitlyn Jenner's Vanity Fair cover and Once you look past the stage management of it, which this is her business along with her family, this is what they do, and so it will be stage managed. She's not going to give it away. However, once you get past that, there is a lot of discussion around what it is she's doing, how she does it. It's really no one else's concern. That's hers.
Exactly. I had an interesting actual someone put up who is a cisgendered male, a very good friend of mine. He wrote something along the lines of, "Why are we celebrating this woman in her doing a glamour cover, whereas other women, for example, people who are members of the Kardashian family, cisgendered women, we would demonize because of impossible beauty standards of women." And my response was quite simply, there's a beautiful quote in All About My Mother. I don't know. Have you ever seen this film? It's Pedro Almodovar. And the character Agrado is a trans woman and has this magnificent, an absolutely magnificent speech about she opens up about her surgeries, which is very, very unusual and not exactly everyone's business. But the reason that she does is that she comes to the end and she says, I was authentic as I dreamt myself to be. And I think that's important here. Now, obviously, the media coverage may have been referenced to the fact that Lovely Texarin has responded that she's a Republican and that factor gets overlooked in all articles. Look,
A bit of doubt there whether the Republicans really want her now.
There is, but also I don't think that this really, like, it's very, very rare for me to say that politics don't matter, and they always will do, and of course this will influence that. And we also have to acknowledge, you know, Caitlyn Jenner is also exceedingly wealthy, and this has been stage managed, and that I'm not going to deny that. Any person who affirms themselves, for me, needs to be applauded, regardless of what political agenda they follow.
The gratifying thing out of this was, as affirming and supportive as the trans community has been of Caitlin, they have also come out and said, this is the reality for Caitlin. It's not the reality for the vast majority of trans people.
What are your thoughts on passing privilege and how to combat that?
You better break it down.
Yeah.
Passing privilege. I think it's really, it's a complicated issue. And I think that it is important that people, trans people who do have that privilege, have space to identify and as trans when they want to on their own terms. I think that it's important to be critical of that. It's funny because I try not to read negative comments about me, but someone on social media said that the question was, is Laverne Cox bad for the trans community? Because, and the argument was because I said I was drop dead gorgeous on the cover of Time magazine, and I don't represent all trans people. And I was like, I'm drop dead gorgeous. And because, you know, the intense thing is I don't feel drop dead gorgeous.
Well, you're
and
right.
I a few weeks ago, and it doesn't happen every day anymore, but a few weeks ago, someone called me a man on the street. I was called a he, she, you know. I still get, I don't think I've ever had passing privilege personally. So, because when somebody's calling you a man on the street, I don't feel like I'm passing. I think the whole thing, Janet speaks beautifully about this, because passing as myself, you know, I think it's like I'm passing as myself. I'm a woman. I'm a black woman. I'm a trans woman. For me, throughout my life and transition, early on, I did not embrace being trans. I was hoping to transition and to pass and to have that privilege, and I didn't. It didn't happen. I would still walk down the street and get in so many of my sisters and brothers and siblings, trans siblings in general, have experienced that when they're walking down the street and people call them out of their names. And for me, I had to begin to empower myself and say that there's nothing wrong with me being trans. There's nothing wrong with me being recognized as trans, because being trans is beautiful.
You're listening to Lefty Pinkos here on Joy 94.9 with Patrick and Emma. That was an excerpt from Laverne Cox, who is overquoted for one very good reason, as that is that she's bloody intelligent and one of the most visible actors who is trans in the world. And I think the most visible trans actor in the world.
I think she is, and she comes across as just so nice. Pleasure, as always, Patrick.
An absolute pleasure.
It's a difficult discussion, this.
It's always going to continue on, and it's never going to stop, and I'm very keen for this to continue being a point of discussion.
And it's something when I was doing a bit of reading on passing, and someone said, well, shouldn't we just teach everybody in the world to love everybody? That's a little far-fetched and a bit not
a little bit pipe dream.
Pipe dream. The alternative is just win people over one person at a time. And that's, I think, most trans folks' experience, that you deal with people one at a time and we make progress. The problem I have with a few people, a lot of the issues we do on Lefty Pinkos, is they go, does anyone care?
And Thank you very much for listening to Lefty Pinkos on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to A Little Pot of Joy on Joy 94.9 with Alice and Andrea. Up next from Transpositions, we have A Mother's Unquestioning Love and Understanding.
Kylie discusses her experience as the mother of a primary school-aged transgender daughter, Bella. The story of Bella's coming out as a six-year-old is an absolute highlight. We really can't put into words the way that Kylie expresses her love for Bella. You'll just have to listen to the podcast.
And if you just can't listen to the show live, download the podcast from the Joy website, joy.org.au, or the iTunes store.
You're listening to A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program.
Good evening. You are listening to Transpositions on Joy 94.9. In the studio tonight, we have got Kurt and we've also got Michelle.
I'm excited about tonight.
Yeah.
Because this is a topic that we'd never really spoken about on Transpositions before.
It is. And actually, joining us in the studio tonight, we do have a very lovely guest. Her name's Kylie and she's a parent of a transgender girl.
Welcome, Kylie.
Thank you.
How was it for you, actually, Kylie, coming out and sort of knowing that your daughter was born male, was assigned male at birth, but when she started to come out and saying that she wasn't a boy, how was that for you?
To begin with, it was more how was I going to help my child. It wasn't a shock because from a very young age that I could tell that, you know, with Bella having a twin, that, you know, she wasn't a typical male and that there was more to her in terms of her gender, and so it wasn't really a shock at all. So it was more just understanding and working out what it was that I was going to do to help her and make sure that, you know, she lives a happy and fulfilling life. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's interesting, pardon me, and because myself being a parent, so it's a totally different perspective. So being a parent who's trans of children who identify as the gender they're born in, mm-hmm. like, yeah, I have a totally different perspective on this whole thing, and it's interesting how people can emotionally open up to children when they hear about children going through this. Like I myself, like if I heard one of my children were going through this, knowing what I went through, I'd be like, oh my God, yeah. I would just be just beside myself. Mm-hmm. What age did this start happening at with
Bella? Well, from 18 months old, I knew that because of Bella having a twin brother, that she was very feminine. And so she thrived on dress-ups and was very feminine in her approaches to how she played with toys and things like that. So there was that comparison that I had. But I just assumed back then that we had a gay child. So, you know, I wasn't going to do anything about that because, you know, I love her exactly the way she is and I don't care what her sexual preference is, her, whatever. And it wasn't until I noticed a decline in her personality, a bit of depression, a bit of anger was developing. So we sat down one day and had a bit of a chat at the age of six. And I just said, look, you know, Belle, what's going on? I've noticed something's not quite right. You're really angry with your little sister as well. You know, I don't understand what's happening. And so she finally built the courage up and sat me down on the couch with her twin brother and just said, look, Mum, you know, I've got to tell you something. I'm too scared to tell you, but I've got to tell you. And I said, well, you can tell me anything you like. And she was like, well, I'm really a girl and I want to know when I'm going to get a vagina. And so in my head, I didn't react because I physically, like, you know, in my facial expressions, I just wanted to remain quite calm. And I was like, okay. I said, that's okay. We'll sort it out. Inside, like, I had a million and one thoughts racing through my head, like, oh my goodness, how do I help my child? What do I do? Where do I go? Who's going to support us? How do I deal with this? But rather than going to my usual mode of trying to fix everything straight away, I was like, let's just take a deep breath and just give her a hug, give her some love, yeah. And then, we'll deal with it.
Yeah. So this is at six years old.
Yeah.
Now, do you have a partner, husband?
Not at the moment, but yeah, Bella is very much involved with her father. Like, he's a big part of their life. So, okay. Yeah.
I'm just curious what the reaction was from him as well.
It took him a little bit of time because obviously, like, you know, he's a bit of a blokey bloke. So it was a bit confronting for him and he was thinking, you know, that it's a phase. And I said to him, you know, look, a phase is usually a short-term thing. You notice a change in it. But in fact, you know, this has been going on for years and you can't really say that it's a phase anymore. And for him, you know, in our house, he noticed that she'd gone from, you know, wearing shorts, T-shirt, to dresses and, you know, female underpants. And, you know, just it was just that she transformed into, you know, the little girl that she is. Mm. So it took him a while. But the thing is, I helped educate him along the way by showing him things and explaining to him, this is what's happening, this is what will happen next. Let's just go with it and trust that, you know, she's going to dictate the journey and we'll just be there to support her. So
just ride the wave.
Yeah, yeah.
Far out.
What was it like for you when she told you? What was your initial reaction when this happened?
Do they have a vaginas or us that I could go to, get one, fix the problem, make her happy and let's get on with life and, you know, let her be happy. But never once did I think, oh, my God, this is really bad. What am I going to do? How is it affecting me? Mm. It was a matter of, like, what am I going to do to make sure my child lives a fulfilling life?
Yep.
Because obviously I, you know, had read, viewed things on YouTube and all that sort of stuff about the high suicide rates. And there was no way that I was even going to contemplate that for my child because I'm an advocate. You know, I signed up to unconditionally love my children and that was, it wasn't going to be no different.
I can definitely understand that because I read some statistics somewhere that said over a lifetime, about 50% of transgender people will actually try to take their own lives. Mm. And is that something which really concerned you?
Yeah, because in the early days, like when Belle had transitioned, started to transition, there were days, there was a really hard, like solid month of her life where at school she was going to school as male and then, you know, coming home and being a female, that she started holding her stool and making herself ill because she said that she'd sooner die than have to go to school being male and that she wanted to, she wanted to die. She didn't want to be a boy anymore.
That's horrible to hear. Again, you know, being a parent as well, I did hear that.
Yeah.
We touched on a bit about you know, when your daughter sat you down with her twin,
yes,
and said, and I was asking when she was going to get a vagina.
Uh-huh.
What were the next steps that you did? How did you go from there? How did you approach it?
Yeah, I gave everyone a little bit of sort of thinking time and just left it up to Bella to talk to us about how she was feeling and where to next. She did request for some little things like, you know, a female nightie and some underpants. And I was like, sure, we can do that. You can wear dresses. And she's got a little sister similar in size. So they would share clothes. So that was fine. So it started there and we just followed her lead. Then I started watching things on YouTube and found jazz in America and watched that and thought, oh, this is my life. Like, this is exactly what we're going through. And then from there started to work out what it is that I needed to do to find, you know, the necessary avenues to get the medical assistance that Bella needed here. I went to the GP and he said, oh, look, you know, just chuck him in front of Ben 10 and masculinize him because, you know, it's because you've got a vagina and that he loves you so much. He wants to be you. And I'm like, yeah, his twin is exactly the same, but he doesn't want a vagina. So help me out.
It's not funny, but
no, but it is.
The doctor's answer to your child's being transgender was Ben 10.
Yeah, Ben 10. And I was just like, oh, I don't think Ben 10's going to help me here. But yeah, whatever.
I see. I think my case probably would have been maybe He-Man and
something. Yeah, but you know, Ben 10's like got how many multiple personalities? So therefore, you know, whatever. Yeah. So anyway, we did that, and then I thought, well, I'm getting nowhere here. So let's just go and live our life for a little bit more. I did some research and found a psychologist, Dr. Michael Carr-Gregg, contacted him and he put me onto Fintan Hart, who's another psychologist, but he deals with adults. So then I managed to track down some information about the Children's Hospital. So I got in touch, but like, you know, lots of harassing. Dr. Campbell Paul. And so it was like I got desperate one night and I was crying on the bed and I just called the reception and I said, you just need to let me talk to him. And she was like, he's in his room. I'll just go and put you through. From that point, it was our opportunity to talk to him and say, look, this is my situation. I need some help.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Now, when you started letting Bella just start presenting herself as, I guess, her true self.
Yes.
Did you notice a difference in her?
Oh, personality-wise, it's like that analogy of, you know, being in the cocoon and then once the butterfly emerges, a different child, like a happy person. Yeah, she still gets angry and grumpy and, you know, has her days at the world, but, you know, she's a woman, so she, you know, she can be that way. But, yes, you know, true. In the scheme of things, like we, and especially when transition took place full-time, the first day of school, like I've never had a child so happy.
Really?
Yeah, so, it was so amazing.
So when she first came out and when you first started doing the sleep transitioning at home.
Yes.
How was it with going to school then from like depressed. Presenting at home than going to school.
Yeah, every morning when, you know, even though the uniform that she wears is unisex, but just the demeanour was like, oh, and, you know, I said, look, you know, you can wear your runners, pink runners, whatever, but still having to go to male toilets and being identified as male, you know, caused a great deal of angst and depression. But then, yeah, once things moved forward and in the right direction, this person just emerged, this happy, confident, more at peace person emerged, and that made us feel great, yeah, for the first time. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, that's an amazing story.
Yeah.
You've been listening to A Little Pot of Joy on Joy 94.9 with Alice and Andrea. Now, before we finish the show tonight, I just thought that we should probably make a very important announcement that we haven't had a chance to make yet. So, Andrea, go ahead, share your news.
I have a new grandchild.
Congratulations.
A gorgeous little girl, Matilda.
Ugh.
And that makes 3 grandkids now.
Amazing. Congrats again.
Thank you very much.
And she's a Joy member, isn't she?
Yes, she is. We joined her up at about 2 hours and 34 minutes of age.
Absolutely amazing.
So she has her own membership number and we'll keep topping up her membership.
Well, welcome to Joy, Matilda.
Well, it's been an absolutely fantastic evening. If you'd like to hear the entire podcast from any of tonight's segments, you can find the complete podcast on the Joy website, www.joy.org.au, or download them for free from the iTunes store.
Good night, everybody.
You've been listening to A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program. See joy.org.au and click on our podcast link to subscribe to your favourite podcasts free.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.